Hey, everybody, Andrew Zarian here with another Matt Man interview. This week, it's really funny. I was going down a list of people that I have coming up and people that I want to interview, and I got a DM from a random viewer. He's like, hey, listen, you live in New York, and you have that New York thing going. Do you know this guy, JD from New York? And I'm like, of course I know Jerry. We called NLW together out in Long Island. He is one of the on the commentary team for House of Glory. He's doing some amazing stuff. YouTube channel JD from NY206. I want to introduce JD from New York. What's going on, man?
What's up, Andrew, man? Good to see you.
Good seeing you. I mean, it's been a while. We met a couple years ago on the island at an independent show that we were both on commentary. And I think you ended up on commentary because Matt Ryan couldn't make it, and I ended up on commentary because somebody else couldn't make it.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know exactly what happened there, but it ended up being a great endeavor for both of us, I feel. I thought it was a great show. I was just getting my feet wet in the whole commentary thing, and, you know, it was a great learning experience, and I had a blast.
Yeah, I think it's, you sometimes look back on moments, and you're like, wow, you know, it was a happy circumstance that things played out. But I got to meet you, and I got to meet a lot of great people. But it's interesting. We've never really crossed paths with our content. We do very different type of content. Very different type of pro wrestling commentary, but I have an appreciation for what you do because it's so different, and it shows that the way that pro wrestling is, you could have 5,000 different guys doing all different types of angles on how they're perceiving what's happening, and it works, right? I mean, you're inside of the community. You see a ton of people producing content with similar opinions, but the delivery is what makes the difference.
The whole thing about me and what I do, I wanted to attack it in a different way. I feel like a lot of people go to the audio end of things and they stick with it. I wanted to stick out from everybody in the community and do video as well as audio. I could do both, and I knew I could do both. But I want people to physically see me, you know, reactions and body language and passion and happiness and anger and all those emotions. You know, it's such a different It's on a different level when you can physically see the person that you're listening to. And I wanted to stand out by doing that. I know Steven Larson do the whole video thing. They also do the audio thing. Brian Zane, Wrestling with Regret, he does the video and audio thing. A lot of people don't do it, so I feel like I created a nice niche for myself.
No, I think you do. You have a tremendous niche. And obviously you do your Raw reviews and your SmackDown reviews and NXT. And you generally go long form as far as the content goes, which I genuinely appreciate. I like long form content. So I want to know a little bit about you as a pro wrestling fan. What was your first pro wrestling experience? What was the moment that you said, okay, I'm a fan of this insanity?
It probably would have to be, I remember vividly, me and my parents and my grandparents all sat around because my dad was kind of into it, but he really wasn't into it. And it was just something that he turned me on to. And I remember seeing The Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man Randy Savage. I have these unbelievable childhood memories of my mom having this man crush on Macho Man Randy Savage. That was her favorite. And I always remember her telling me that for some reason. But I was a big Ultimate Warrior guy. And I think the one thing that really, really stood out to me was WrestleMania 5 when it was The Ultimate Warrior and Ravishing Rick Rude for the Intercontinental title. And Bobby the Brain Heenan just slipped his hand underneath the bottom rope and held the Warrior's foot down when Rick Rude won the title. I remember that as being one of the biggest moments of my pro wrestling childhood, and I never look back from that.
I feel like, you know, you're telling me that story, and I kind of get goosebumps because I go back to, like, what I felt, you know, when my father was a much bigger wrestling fan than I thought he was when I was a kid. Turns out because my grandfather was a pro bodybuilder and he was workout buddies with Bruno. So that's my weird entry into pro wrestling. But for me, I mean, very similar moments. But for me, it had to have been Bobby Heenan calling Flair in the Royal Rumble and how he was pushing. And this kind of goes into how you do commentary, too. He was telling the story that this man is about to die in that ring. And I just believed it. And no one, you know, no matter how much someone tells you pro wrestling isn't real or this, that was a moment as a kid. And you know this as a kid. You didn't go into it thinking like this is that they're really beating people up. I think kids, especially our generation, we were a little bit smarter about it. But that was a moment I'm like, oh, my God, this poor old man is going to die. Little did I know he was 42 years old and he just looked older for the look. But I think we all have that story to tell. So you vividly remember this. Did you continue it throughout your teenage years? Were you into it till now, or did you have ups and downs?
I was pretty much straightforward all the way through. I believe I took a break during the Ruthless Aggression era. Like that whole John Cena, you know, Thugonomics thing, I just could not get into it at that point. And I took a 6 month to 1 year hiatus. I literally stopped watching. And before that, I was 100%, never missed a Monday night. When SmackDown went to UPN, Channel 9 here in New York, you know, it was one of those things I just never missed. I remember sitting at the kitchen table, having my mom put on the TV in the kitchen, watching SmackDown while we ate dinner. And there was just that one little period where I had a little hiccup, and then I picked it up again. And now I'm doing what I'm doing. I mean, it eventually transitioned into what I'm doing now, but, you know, it was just that little period that stopped.
So how does a transition happen? You've been doing this for a couple of years now, obviously. This is your gig. This is your job. Which I applaud you for diving in and doing that, because there's a lot of ups and downs with it, but it's your passion and you're obviously very good at what you're doing. How do you take that dive? How do you say, okay, I want to now do wrestling commentary? I know you did video game stuff prior. So was that the transition for you?
It all started when I was working. I worked retail for 13 years. I worked for the Tourneau Time Machine in Midtown.
I feel your pain, by the way. I worked retail for a long time. I understand. It's not easy.
On 57th and Madison, I sold high-end watches, you know, Patek Philippe, Rolex, Cartier. And then I transitioned into a different type of retail over at Kay Jewelers. And I worked a little bit more closer to home. I worked in Yonkers. At the Cross County Mall. And I hated it so much. And believe it or not, I'm not really a people person. Like, I'm one of the most down-to-earth, shy guys you could ever meet. But when you put me in that type of environment and someone's going to get on my nerve just a little bit, it's like you watch me on YouTube. I just want to snap. You know? So it took me 3 years working with K's to say, you know what? Screw this. I don't want to do it anymore. The channel was doing okay, but it wasn't to a point where it was going to be a full-time gig.
But you were doing wrestling coverage at this point, right?
Yeah, I was doing both. I was getting up at 6 a.m. and getting home at 9, and then doing the YouTube stuff and going to bed at like 3 o'clock in the morning and get up at 6. It was a nightmare. So I dedicated my entire, you know, days to work and then do the YouTube channel. You know, I was in an eight-year relationship currently at the time. I was messing that all up because she didn't understand. Now she understands. But at the end of the day, it was, do I want to stay here or do I want to just go home and take a chance? And I asked my parents, I asked my best friends. Everybody said the same thing. Take the damn leap. And I took the leap. And I swear to God, man, I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and that's such an amazing story for anybody that's kind of stuck in a position where they think they can't do this because of this. It's a story to be told where you can, you know, you could, if you take the risk and you say, okay, you know what, things are making sense here, I want to go forward with it. Dedicating full time to the channel. Now, JD from NY 206 is a channel for people who don't know. You've been very polarizing, for people. You know, I watch you bench people on Twitter, which I kind of get a kick out of it. How does that affect you as, I guess, as somebody that has to do this for, I mean, obviously there are people that really annoy you. It's part of the, you know, part of the thing that you're doing. It's funny to a lot of people, but you do seem to get a lot of people that watch you and they just want to just argue with you.
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't present a product or a podcast to people that I would not tell you directly to your face. And people think that what I do on YouTube is some sort of character. And it's not. It's me amped up as if you're thinking of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold was Stone Cold, you know, outside the ring. It's just Steve Austin amped up to another level. And that's what I do. I mean, people want to watch, I'm going to entertain. That's my whole mentality behind it. But the opinion behind it is exactly what I would tell you in person. I had a Hooters meet and greet during WrestleMania weekend. Nothing that I say to anybody standing in that line is different from what I would do on my show. And people want to argue because I think a lot of people are jaded by the product. They watch and they want to believe in what the WWE is doing, and I'm telling them you can't because it's not really great right now. Yeah. And I don't want people to watch and be manipulated by what WWE is feeding them because it's totally something different. I wish I could tell them differently. I wish the product was better, but I believe right now it's not really all that good.
Listen, I agree with you. I think there's so many issues, I guess, for lack of a better term, that they're facing. That the last 2 weeks, you know, and we try to analyze it a little bit differently, but the last 2 weeks watching the product, you're thinking, okay, this is the plan. This is their get people to watch the product again. If this is it, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it at this point. You know, I'm always hopeful that they get their act together and they go on the right trajectory. But, you know, we were supposed to get a major change when? January?
Yeah, in January. And, you know, I'm sure you feel it too with what you're doing. You'll have some people that agree with you and then some people that don't agree with you. You know, I've never found you to be a negative individual. But, you know, when I say something is bad or I say something is good, people argue either way. So I can't win. And I tell them, just watch me during an NXT takeover or watch me during an NXT show on Wednesday. That's what I genuinely enjoy because it's geared towards the right direction. And then even at that point, people are like, oh, NXT sucks or NXT is full of vanilla midgets or NXT is a bunch of indie marks. I'm like, I can't win with anybody.
No, you can't. So this kind of goes into a conversation that I tend to have a lot. You know, we do this. For me, I've been doing broadcasting for 10 years now, right? This is part of my life at this point. I'm not a person to tell anybody that they shouldn't have a voice in a matter, but because we're so reactionary, as a society now, especially online, do you think that's the thing where everybody is now looking at a product as a critic to find the negativity rather than see what's good first and then acknowledge what's wrong?
Absolutely. I don't really know any other way. I mean, I think you put it perfectly. I think, you know, it's WWE's fault too, because I don't even think at this point they're trying. So anything that is projected at WWE is going to be negative because everything that WWE gives back to us just comes off in a way that there's no effort. Like, they're not trying. We know that they could physically do better with the talent that they have. They have probably, talent-wise, the greatest roster they've ever had, and they just fail to give any effort at all. So the way I see it, yeah, I'm going to project negative instead of looking for the good, because WWE hasn't given any good. It's the opposite way with NXT. I always attack with the positive first because they always present positive. I very rarely say anything negative about NXT, but when they do something negative, I am not afraid to call them out on it either.
So you obviously, you work with House of Glory. You've been with them for a while. I work with Capital Wrestling, and we kind of get a interesting insight on how it is to manage a small amount of talent. Or sometimes, you know, we've had that problem where we book somebody and then they get signed somewhere, and now we have to figure out what the next move is, you know, and we did 10 weeks of TV with them. So there's a lot of shucking and jiving that has to happen, especially on the small front. And why do you think NXT, for example, is a much smaller operation? Why do you think NXT is able to get it so right most of the time, right? Because they've done some stuff that I'm not crazy about, but majority of the time, I watch their weekly TV, 1 hour TV show. I go, okay, that made sense. And it's going to lead to this, and it'll lead to this, and it'll lead to a takeover, and the takeovers are always good. Why do you think it's so easy for them, but it's so difficult for a Raw to, you know, go forward? Do you think it's the hours? Do you think it's what's your opinion on it?
I mean, there's a multitude of reasons why Raw right now isn't producing good content at all. I feel like the 3 hours is a real hindrance on them. And I know that's not going to change anytime soon. And I can argue with people till I'm blue in the face as to why that's wrong and why they should be 2 hours. But again, it's not going to change. All the stories and all the horror stories of Vince McMahon. Even just today, I'm reading 4 or 5 other writers outside of Road Dogg and R.D. Evans, who quit at the Hall of Fame due to the Bret Hart Hall of Fame speech, have quit and stepped down. And I feel like the work environment is so chaotic that I don't think there's a good backstage morale from what I feel and read. Also, I feel like there's too much talent on the main roster that they don't know what to do with. Whereas in NXT, yeah, it's a one-hour show. The one-hour show definitely helps. I mean, I on most weeks, I wouldn't mind if it was 2 hours. But I love the mentality of Triple H going into it, quality over quantity. I want you coming back next week for more. That's why he doesn't do 6, 7, 8 matches on TakeOver, or TakeOver is 4 or 5 hours. 2 hours, 3 hours at most. You are going to sit there wanting more, and that's the feeling that he wants to leave us with. Also, NXT is taped, so they tape 4 shows in one day, and before that, I can assume that they sit down collectively and they have an entire month to map out storylines, where Monday Night Raw is written as it's live on the USA Network. So it's honestly a tale of two worlds.
It's amazing, actually. It really is a tale of two worlds. Now, you've been a big proponent for AEW.
Yes.
Right now, I wasn't planning on asking you this, but you saw the rumor about them having to pay for their TV, right?
Yeah, they came out and collectively have said hard no on that.
Yeah,
they never heard that at all.
This is a amazing example of how piling on happens on the internet, where the story, I'm willing to bet most people did not actually read the 411 Mania article or the interview that was done, where the guy is just a TV guy. He's not a pro wrestling guy. He's a TV guy that likes wrestling, I guess. And his wording was that he talked to people that are from the TV business, and he talked to people that are wrestling journalists, and they came to the conclusion. All of that is omitted in these headlines that you're seeing. Doesn't that drive you nuts when you see something like that? I feel like, listen, if a product is good, as a product is good. Right now, it's really very limited testing for AEW. My hope is that they are unbelievable and they do great. I'm willing to bet that they're gonna do pretty well with what they're doing. They got great minds there. But when you see people piling on with a nonsense story like this, how do you respond to that?
I don't. I turn the other cheek because I really do. You know, I get it too with the YouTube stuff. I put something in the headline or the title of the video, and people base my opinion off the title of the video. I'm like, dude, I have an hour and 40 minutes of content here that you refuse to watch, and you want to base my opinion off of a 100-word title on YouTube. And I feel like, and I don't know if you've seen this on social media, a lot of people want AEW to fail for whatever reason, and I feel like they're going out of their way to make them look bad or write stuff about them that isn't true. Now, I ask you, do you understand why people do that? I mean, does it make any sense to you why someone would want a company to fail so badly?
I feel like there is a... I got to be careful how I say this. There is a problem with needing to belong, and there are people that genuinely feel that they cannot accept something else as being positive because that is not what they are used to, and this is all that they know. They know WWE. By the way, I had a very interesting discussion with somebody from the TV industry that knows numbers, right? And I've spoken about this on the show. And people kind of want to get more detail about this. There are most likely about 500,000 hardcore wrestling fans. Most on the high end. P1s, right? P1 is a term for people who don't know where, they use it in radio marketing. That is your demo. Those are the guys going to the shows, buying. Like, JD and I, we're P1s, right? We're into the product. We're committed to it. We'll watch it every week. We'll continue talking about it. It's the P2 and P3 viewership that is necessary. 500,000 people is very small for a viewership when you compare it to the NFL or NBA. I feel like that 500,000, that hardcore audience, feels like they need to belong. They need to be loyal. We saw this with Impact Wrestling. Listen, I think Impact is doing a hell of a product right now. They're doing the best stuff that they've done. They look good. I never want to see another company go out of business. But for many, many years when it was TNA, they were doing a terrible job. They also suffered from that diehard audience that refused to acknowledge that the product is bad. I feel like when you feel like you belong to something, people just want to take it and don't want to accept anything else. And I think that's the thing with AEW right now. I think there are WWE fans, not wrestling fans, but WWE fans that feel like this is an attack on them personally.
Yeah, you know, I could see that, and you know, I think you're 100% right in that. And I don't really, I honestly feel like if you are wanting AEW to fail, you are not a genuine wrestling fan, and you're not looking at the bigger picture. You talk about before, you know, when you see people on social media, that, you know, and they attack the WWE negatively first before positively. I think everybody that's doing this with AEW is somewhat of a hypocrite, because what I do with WWE, they're doing right back to our support in AEW. And I feel like AEW as a whole is going to be great for the business. You know, you mentioned your affiliation with Capital Wrestling. I'm with House of Glory. We see the talent and the struggle just to even make it on the independent scene and the work that these men and women do. Why would you want another promotion that could ultimately give a home to all these people that we have, you know, welcomed into our lives, not have a home to go to? Like, this is a great thing for all those talents that we see day in and day out at the promotions we work for.
I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with the cultural change happening right now, right? Look at the political climate that we're in, right? Where people are, first of all, I no longer argue with people online. If I take a look at your timeline and all I see is political commentary on there, and you're making a comment to me about, you know, how my opinion of AEW is flawed, that they're going to be successful, and I take a look and all I see is political commentary, I'm done. I don't even respond. I think we've gotten into this bizarre culture where people don't behave the same way they would in public as they do online.
No, absolutely
I
not.
think that it's gotten listen, man, I'm all about anonymity. I cover technology for a living. I mean, that's my main gig, you know, my main show. But I always find it amazing that people are so guttural with their response to people, rather than saying, like, listen, man, let's say I listen to your content, right? I listen to JD from NY on YouTube, JD from NY206, by the way, if people want to check it out. And it's not my cup of tea, right? Let's say it's not my deal. It's not my thing. You know what I would do? I just wouldn't watch it. I wouldn't go and start attacking you. Start digging into who you are and where you live and what you're saying and what you're doing, then continue to listen and message you, and then tell other people. I think that it's almost become its own way of watching content. You know, you people watch content to kind of just to, you know, not to enjoy it. We obviously have to watch things that we don't like because we cover it for a living. It's a little different for us. We're making, you know, we have ads and we got to continue doing shows. But I've always said, when the day comes and I no longer like pro wrestling, if that day ever shows up, I'm just going to say, listen, guys, this is the last week I'm doing this. I'm not into this anymore. And I'm done. I don't think people could turn things off. I've seen, listen, obviously, I go back and forth sometimes with people, but I've seen like, terrible, heinous things that have been said. And I'm like, how do you go? It's wrestling. How do you get to that point?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've heard everything under the sun from you know, death threats to my family, people shitting on my grandfather's name because he passed away 4 years ago. They want to attack you below the belt. You know, I've heard stuff about I'm a cat owner, you know, and I can't own dogs where I'm living. And I'm a cat owner, and people attack the cats. I'm like,
Jesus
you know,
Christ.
it's ridiculous. People attack the car that I'm driving. Oh, you mean the car that I actually paid for doing the YouTube thing that you hate, but you still watch anyway, you know? So it's, you know, I'm trying to do better as a way of, you know, people say kill them with kindness. Some people attack me on social media. I'm like, thank you for upping my view count, and thank you for listening to me today. That's
Yeah.
it, you know?
I think it's an interesting bubble that we're in right now. So what do you think of AEW? I know that you know, obviously you want it to succeed. I want it to succeed. I think most logical people want this to succeed
I
because
want to succeed. I spent $50 on their brand new hoodie. I wear it around.
Yeah, me too, actually. I want it to succeed, of course. I'm walking around. Imagine it doesn't. It's like an XFL shirt now.
Yeah, I feel legit. I feel like someone actually thought I was on a pro wrestling team. I'm like, no, it's just AEW.
Yeah. It's awesome. Listen, it's great. What's your outlook on this? Obviously the Turner News and everything like that, but what, you know, give me your opinion. I mean, you cover wrestling as much as I do, probably a little more than I do at this point. But we're, you know, 6 months from now, where are we sitting?
6 months from now, I feel like we are legit looking at a brand that is going to rival SmackDown Live as far as the ratings go. That's the way I feel about it. What I mentioned before about it being another destination for all the talent that we love on the independent scene, whether it's out of a Capitol Wrestling or a House of Glory. That's just one huge perk to it. But I feel like the mentality with what Cody and the Bucks and Omega and everybody involved are doing, I get a sense of being a part of the company without actually physically being a part of it. I love when something is brand new and it's starting up from the ground up. To me, there's nothing more exciting than seeing something from day one grow into what we feel could be potentially, honestly, the second biggest wrestling promotion in the world. And that's the most excitement I get out of it, seeing it grow and watching everybody within it grow. I love investing my time into these guys, whether I know them or not, and seeing them get to that next level. There's just something about it that I love. And that's the reason I love NXT so much, because I get to see them grow and, you know, fall in love with them, and then they ultimately die on the main roster.
Yeah, well, that's it. Viking Experience is a great example. Please. Of I listened to you lose your mind over that. I feel all the pain, but it's comical. It's almost when you see them come out and they introduce them as the Viking Experience, and you have to think they are just effing with you at this point, right? They know this is not going to get over. Nobody's going to care for this name. They were War Machine. Obviously, they can't use that because of copyright. Now they're the War Raiders, and they decided that war is too much, or Vince didn't like it. But I almost want them to be the Berserkers. If my choice was between the Berserkers and the Viking Experience for two terrible names, I would go with the Berserkers. No.
Well, I mean, I read yesterday that the actual Berserker, the actual character, the 1990s wrestler, the Berserker, he got arrested on a DUI. So I don't know if that has anything to do with that name being dropped. He was arrested on a DUI this week. So I doubt that has anything to do with the fact that WWE didn't use that name. But
John Nord.
You know, I have this weird feeling that, and I posted on social media. I tweeted Triple H and Vince McMahon, and the tweet right now is sitting at like basically 6,000 likes.
Wow.
Like, who the hell am I to get 6,000 likes on a tweet about someone's name change? But I feel like Vince is legitimately trying to take everything that's popular in NXT that he doesn't like, that is over, and kill it before it actually makes the main roster. Because to me, this makes no sense. When you have Tom Phillips on Tuesday night, I don't know if you were paying attention or not, Ember Moon came out as the newest addition to SmackDown Live, and he called her on commentary the War Goddess. One of the biggest movies of all time, Infinity War,
interesting,
is mainstream. So I don't get why Vince doesn't want war, war, war to be chanted on Monday Night Raw, because it's against advertisers' wishes, or it looks bad to advertisers. If it was bad, why was it built for a year in NXT? Now it's bad?
Listen, I think it's overthinking things, right? Like, I sometimes feel that when you're in the bubble that they're in, it's a vacuum, and all you hear is your own thoughts, and you start overanalyzing everything. These guys got over in NXT. I mean, two big dudes, extremely talented. Every match that they've done on those pay-per-views has been stellar. I mean, just up there. How do you take that and you change their name to something so silly? And by the way, the experience part is going to go away, right? They're just going to be called what? Vikings? The Vikings?
Dude, that's as lame as ever, dude. I mean, I don't understand. I still don't understand. I mean, people are joking around. You enter Ivar and Eric on Google, and you mention popular Viking names, and Ivar and Eric are the first two things that pop up. People were making memes about it because that's exactly what they did. I feel like they're so out of – this is the one thing that we could all look at and say that they're completely out of touch with everything that is popular and cool in pro wrestling, and I mean that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, but you know what'll get them to be popular and cool? Somebody else to do it. Somebody else becoming popular and cool and being connected to what's happening in the world right now, and then maybe they'll get their thought together. I was talking to somebody over there, and they said something very interesting to me, where they will not AEW is not competition to their product, but NXT will compete with AEW. That's their mentality here.
I think that's really outlandish to say. When AEW, and I'm not gonna say they're gonna come right out of the gate firing on all cylinders. It might be a work in progress. We don't know what they're gonna produce on TV as far as ratings go. But as soon as they start inching closer and closer to SmackDown in the ratings, then they'll have a different tune to tell.
Yeah, really. SmackDown did 2 million this week. They have to be at around 3 million for Fox to be even slightly satisfied with them. I think the fear that I have that the mentalities in the company is that they're thinking networks have the same type of importance being on network TV because of the exposure you'll have to people. It has the same importance that it did 15 years ago. And that's not true in this digital age where homes don't necessarily have antennas. They just watch their, they just consume their content on the computer. So being on Fox on a Friday from 8 to 10 is not going to bring you 2-3 million people that you didn't have before.
Yeah, man, I don't know if that's going to work the way that they want. Just like you mentioned, I mean, Friday, you know, it's the end of the weekend for many people. People want to go out. They want to go to dinner. They want to go out and drink. They want to go hang out with their friends, take their wife or girlfriend out to dinner. You know, who wants to be home stuck watching SmackDown Live for 8 to 10, especially with the way the product is? You're not going to generate casual viewers by that because everybody wants to do their own thing on Friday night. I don't really know. And I just feel like, you know, Fox is entering this partnership with WWE, and I question why they want such a poor product right now. And then I believe they were interviewed like a couple of weeks ago. They pretty much want something that is continuous 52 weeks a year to give them constant content throughout their entire season. When there's an off season here, an off season there, WWE has remained constant. That's what they want. That's what they find to be more valuable. 52 weeks of content, new content every week.
Yeah. Which, by the way, that's a rarity in the TV business. You don't get that, right? And that says a lot about AEW. Last night I was talking, you know, I got bombarded with people telling me, oh, you heard about this? They're paying for TV. And knowing what I know about the TV business, there is no, name me another network, a major key player network, right? That on a primetime time slot throughout the week, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 o'clock, that are doing pay-for-play on their channel.
I can't think of anything.
There's nothing because it's an impossibility. You would have to be so dumb as a network to do that, and you would be so dumb as a content provider, a content creator, to do that because it's an astronomical fee, and nobody's gaining anything. You're losing out on income on all sides. So to me, it didn't make sense from the second I saw it. I want to talk to you a little bit about what you do with Hog because they have blown up. It's amazing how far they've come over the last couple of years. You are a key player as far as if you watch any of their specials, any of their shows, you hear the voice of JD on there. How did you get involved with them as a guy doing commentary?
Well, it all started, I would say, a little bit more than 2 years ago. I was invited to the Elks Lodge in Queens, and they had their Chapter 3 event. And the main event was Anthony Gangone, who is our world champion right now. Probably one of the hardest working guys on the indies. And I know he's worked with Capital Wrestling here and there as well. It was the main event of Anthony Gangone defending the world title against Ricochet. So I was asked to come on in and try out. And my first match, or my first main event was a Ricochet main event. Now he's on Monday Night Raw. So I look back at that and think, man, this is crazy. But an actual subscriber of mine worked for House of Glory, and he invited me down, and he was the sound guy, engineer guy. He's like, come on in. We need a new commentary team. So I was paired with Matthew Ryan Shapiro, who I love working with every month. Just vast knowledge from that individual, man. He's unbelievable.
Tell him I hate working with him daily. Next time you see him, tell him I told him I hate him.
He's like an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
But I got sat next to him. And from there, they, you know, he personally invited me. You want to do this again next month? I'm like, absolutely, man. So from there, it was just a blossoming relationship. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I'm the lead play-by-play man. I sit next to him every month and I enjoy the hell out of it. I wish we did it more. And I'm constantly growing as a commentary man. I absolutely love telling the story of everybody in that ring. And I've asked them to do a little bit more as far as like creative and get involved and, you know, maybe pitch an angle or a storyline here and there. But, you know, I want nothing for the best for House of Glory, and they got some good things coming up.
Something amazing coming up with Impact Wrestling Sunday, May 5th at the NYC Arena in Jamaica, Queens, New York. I would like to go to that, but I have weddings. I'm in wedding season. I'm being dragged from wedding to wedding this season. Oh, so.
Well, listen, when you get done with your weddings, you can actually watch it On Twitch. I believe Impact is streaming it on their Twitch channel, and Fight TV will be on Fight TV.
Which is great. Distribution for content like this has been great. How's the growth been for Hog? You've been there for, 2 years now, and you've obviously seen it. It's pretty interesting how they've grown, right?
Yeah. We're living in a very social media, heavy world, especially with pro wrestling. If there's one aspect of everything that we really need to work on, it's the social media. I'm a big Twitter guy. I wish we had more of a presence on Twitter. But as far as, the talent, everybody knows Amazing Red. Everybody knows of what Gangone is doing on the indies. He's all over the place. You know, we're bringing in the best talent on the indies to put on these cards. And, we really take a precedent in just delivering great in-ring wrestling. Great in-ring action. And then with our own guys, it's just very storyline driven heavy. And that's what I really like. A lot of people don't appreciate that art of pro wrestling, but House of Glory's got that down 100%. And that's where they excel at.
No, I just pulled up something right now. Gangone, by the way, tremendous worker, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's got the heel shtick down beautifully.
Yeah. It's actually, is there any other independent groups that you've been following that you're enjoying?
Not really. I'm so busy with the WWE stuff, that I rarely even get to watch NXT UK, and that's a shame in itself. So, outside the WWE stuff, I'm 100% Hog. And I have my eyes on different things. I'm not necessarily watching it, but I'm involved.
Involved is not even the word that you are, right? You
can't.
I feel the same way. I'm engulfed. That's what
yeah,
I say.
Engulfed is a better
I'm
word,
engulfed
yeah.
in it. JD, man, this was great to have you on. I'd love to do it again. This is a new series that we launch here where we want to introduce other people covering wrestling, people from the pro wrestling business, just people that our audience maybe doesn't know or maybe does know and wants to know a little bit more and learn a little bit more outside of their product. Obviously JD from NY206 on YouTube, by the way, 100,000, over 100,000 subscribers. Unbelievable.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
That's a huge accomplishment.
We're inching very close. Should happen in the next week or two, probably a week, 109,000.
It's unbelievable. That's amazing. For anybody that is a YouTuber, to even reach that level, that you're doing something right. And that's unbelievable to see. JD from NY206 on Twitter. People could follow you there. People could follow you on YouTube. Do you put your podcast on iTunes or anything or no? Everything.
I do. It's pretty much the same deal everywhere. Like you said, JD from NY206 on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. But I also am on, iTunes. I'm on Spotify and I'm on Podbean.
Excellent. Guys, to get more information, obviously, we'll have it all in our show notes. And that's it for this week. We'll see you all next time. Take care.
Thank you, guys.